Star Wars, Dark Force Rising by Timothy Zahn. Continued. Cassette number 12, side 1. Moving quietly in the brittle silence, Pelion keyed for a course projection on Cabal's ship. "It'll take at least 15 minutes to bring him aboard," he murmured. Thrawn hissed softly between his teeth, and Pelion knew what he was thinking. In the fluid situation of a spontaneous battle, a 15-minute delay could easily be the difference between victory and defeat. "Captain, order the peremptory to assist the Judicator," the Grand Admiral said at last. "We'll remain here to consult our ally." "Thank you, Grand Admiral," Cabalth said. And abruptly, the nav officer gasped and slumped in his chair. "I appreciate your generosity." Thrawn reached to his board, and with a vicious flick of his wrist, cut off the comm. He looked down into the crew pit and motioned to two bridge guards. "Sick bay," he told them, indicating the now shivering nav officer. "Where do you suppose Cabal found that lancer?" Pelion murmured, as the guards helped the nav officer out of his seat and carried him aft. "He most likely hijacked it," Thrawn said, his voice tight. "He's been sending messages for us over distances of several light years, and he certainly knows how to take control of people. Apparently, he's learned how to meld the two abilities." Pelion looked down into the crew pit, a shiver running up his back. "I'm not sure I like that, sir." "I don't much like it myself, Captain," Thrawn agreed, turning his head to look out the viewport. "It may be time," he added thoughtfully, "to reconsider our arrangement with Master Cabal. To reconsider it very carefully." Chapter 28. The Katana's turbolasers flashed, disintegrating the center of the Imperial's dropship formation, and one of Wedge's X-Wing pilots gave a warwhoop. "Will you look at that?" "Cut the chatter, Rogue Seven," Wedge admonished, trying to see through the cloud of flaming debris. The Imperials had gotten a bloody nose, but that was about all. "They've got lots more TIE fighters in reserve." "Wedge?" Wedge switched channels. "I'm here, Luke." "We've decided not to leave the ship," Luke said. "We'd run right into the Imperials, and you know how well transports fight. You might as well get your group out of here and go whistle up some help." The surviving dropships, Wedge saw, were reconfiguring into an evasion pattern, with the TIE fighters moving ahead to clear a path for them. "You'll never be able to hold out," he told Luke flatly. "There could be 300 troops aboard those dropships." "We'll have a better chance against them than you will against a Star Destroyer," Luke retorted. "Come on, get going." Wedge clenched his teeth. Luke was right, and they both knew it. But to abandon his friends here... "Rogue Leader, this is Gold Leader," a new voice abruptly came on the comm, "requesting permission to join the party." Frowning, Wedge threw a glance out the back of his canopy. They were there, all right. The Quenfus's two X-Wing squadrons, coming up behind his group for all they were worth. "Permission granted," he said. "I didn't think Counselor Phalia was going to let you come out and play." "Phalia doesn't have any say in it anymore," the other said grimly. "Tell you about it later. Captain's turned things over to Organa Solo." "First good news I've heard today," Wedge grunted. "All right, here's the scheme. You detail four of your group to hit those dropships. The rest of us will concentrate on the TIE fighters. With luck, we can clear them out before the next wave gets here. I don't suppose we've got any backup of our own coming." "Captain says there's a Star Cruiser on the way," Gold Leader said. "Don't know when it'll get here, though." "Probably not soon enough," Wedge told himself silently. Okay, he said aloud. Let's do it. A new set of drive trails had appeared near the Star Destroyer's docking bay. The second wave of TIE fighters had launched. That was going to be trouble down the line, but for the moment, the X-Wings had this batch of Imperials outnumbered. And the Imperials knew it. They were spreading out, trying to draw their attackers apart where they couldn't cover each other. Wedge did a quick evaluation of the situation. All X-Wings, we'll do a one-on-one, he said. Choose your target and go. Closer now, he could see that two of the Imperial starfighters were the faster and more advanced TIE interceptors. Picking one of them for himself, he broke formation and headed after it. Whatever erosion the Empire had experienced in the way of ships and trained personnel over the past 5 years, it was quickly clear that their starfighter training program hadn't suffered a lot. Wedge's target TIE interceptor slipped adroitly away from his initial attack, doing a sideways skid that simultaneously braked him out of the X-Wing's way and swiveled his lasers around to track along its flight vector. Wedge threw the X-Wing into a drop loop, wincing as the other's shot came close enough to trigger the starboard engine's heat sensors and turned sharply to starboard. He braced himself for a second shot, but it didn't come. Bringing the X-Wing out of its combination loop turn, he looked around for his opponent. Watch your back, Rogue Leader, the voice of Rogue 3 snapped in his ear, and Wedge again threw the X-Wing into a drop loop, just as another laser blast sizzled past his canopy. Not only had the Imperial not been fooled by Wedge's corkscrew maneuver, he'd even managed to follow him through it. He's still with you, Rogue 3 confirmed. Go evasive. I can be there in a minute. Don't bother, Wedge told him. Through the spinning sky outside his canopy, he'd caught a glimpse of another Imperial moving past him to portside. Hauling hard on his controls, he broke out of his loop and drove directly toward it. The TIE fighter jerked slightly as its pilot suddenly became aware of the threat bearing down on him and tried to veer out of the way. Which was exactly what Wedge had counted on. Ducking beneath the TIE fighter, he threw the X-Wing into an upward rolling turn, swinging perilously close to the Imperial's canopy and bringing his nose around to point back the way he'd come. The TIE interceptor, which had instinctively swerved off Wedge's tail to keep from ramming one of his own ships, was caught flat-footed. A single point-blank blast from the X-Wing's lasers blew it out of the sky. Nice flying, Rogue Leader, Gold Leader commented. My turn. Wedge understood. Throwing power to his drive, he shot away from the TIE fighter he'd used for cover, getting clear just as Gold Leader's lasers caught it. How are we doing? Wedge asked as his canopy lit up briefly with the reflected light of the explosion. We're done, Gold Leader said. We are? Wedge frowned, bringing his X-Wing around in a wide circle. Sure enough, the only things visible nearby were X-Wings. Apart from expanding clouds of glowing debris, of course. What about the dropships? He asked. I don't know, the other admitted. Gold 3, Gold 4, report. We got 6 of them, Gold Leader, a new voice said. I don't know what happened to the 7th. Wedge swore under his breath, switching comm channels as he glanced back toward the Star Destroyer. The new group of TIE fighters was coming up fast. No time for him to do anything for the Katana except maybe warn them. Luke, you've got company coming. We know, Luke's tight voice came back. They're already here. They came out of the dropship with lasers blazing, laying down a heavy cover fire as they moved toward the two sets of blast doors that led forward from the docking bay. Luke couldn't see them from where he was, any more than he could see Han's group waiting silently for them behind the edge of the portside blast doors. But he could hear the Imperial's blaster fire, and he could sense their approach. And there was something about that sense that set the back of his neck tingling, something not quite right about them. His comlink beeped. Luke, Lando's voice came softly. They're coming. You ready? Luke closed down his lightsaber and gave his handiwork one last check. A large section of the corridor's ceiling was now hanging perilously by a few strands of metal, ready to come crashing down at the slightest provocation. Beyond it, two sections of the wall were similarly booby-trapped. All set, he told Lando. Okay, here goes. And suddenly, the pitch of a different class of weapons joined the cacophony as the defenders opened up on the Imperials. For a few seconds, the two groups of weapons vied with each other. Then, with a screech of strained metal, the sounds were cut off. The four techs were the first around the corner to where Luke waited, their faces showing the mixture of fear and nervousness and exhilaration of men who've just survived their first firefight. Lando was next, with Han and Chewbacca bringing up the rear. Ready? Han asked Luke. Yes. Luke indicated the rigged sections of ceiling and wall. It's not going to hold them for long, though. Doesn't have to, Han grunted. As long as it takes a few of them out, it's worth it. Let's go. Hold it, Luke said, stretching out with the force. Those strangely disturbing mines. They're splitting up, he told Han. About half are still at the portside blast doors. The other half are going to the starboard operations section. Trying to flank us, Han nodded. Lando, how well is that area sealed off? Not very, Lando admitted. The blast doors from the docking bay itself should hold for a while. But there's a whole maze of storage rooms and maintenance shops off of operations that they can probably get back to the main starboard corridor from. There were too many doors for us to close it all off. From the blast doors they'd just left came the dull thud of a shaped charge. So this group keeps us busy thinking they're all here, while the other one tries to get behind us, Han decided. Well, we didn't want to hold the whole corridor anyway. Chewie, you and Lando take the others and fall back toward the bridge. Take out as many of them as you can on the way. Luke and I'll go across to starboard and see if we can slow that batch down a little. Chewbacca growled an acknowledgement and headed off, the four tech men already on their way. Good luck, Lando said, and followed. Han looked at Luke. Still in just the two groups? Yes, Luke said, straining to locate the enemy. The strange feeling was still there. Okay, let's go. They set off, Han leading the way down a narrow cross corridor lined with the kind of closely spaced doors that indicated crew quarters. Where are we going? Luke asked as they hurried along. Number two starboard weapons blister, Han said. Should be something nasty there we can use to flood the main corridor with. Turbo laser coolant or something. Unless they have life support gear, Luke pointed out. They don't, Han said. At least they weren't wearing any when they charged us. They had standard trooper air filters. But if we fill the whole corridor with coolant, those won't do them much good. You never know, he added reflectively. The coolant might be flammable, too. Too bad the Katana fleet wasn't made up of star galleons, Luke said, reaching out again toward the enemy. As near as he could tell, they were in the maze of rooms Lando had mentioned, working their way around toward the main starboard corridor. We really could have used those anti-intruder defenses they came equipped with. If this was a star galleon, the Empire wouldn't be so anxious to take it away from us in one piece, Han retorted. They'd just blow it out of the sky and be done with it. Luke grimaced. Right. They reached the main starboard corridor, and they were halfway across it when Han suddenly stopped short. What in blazes? Luke turned to look. 10 meters down the corridor, sitting in a patch of darkness beneath burned-out light panels, was a large metal box resting at a tilt on a half-seen tangle of cables and struts. Twin blaster cannon protruded from beneath a narrow viewport. The corridor walls immediately around it were warped and blackened, with a half dozen good-sized holes visible. "What is it?" he asked. "Looks like a scaled-down version of a scout walker," Anne said. "Let's go take a look." "Wonder what it's doing here," Luke said as they walked toward it. The floor beneath their feet was noticeably warped, too. Whoever had been in there firing had done a thorough job of it. "Probably someone brought it out of storage during the hive virus thing that killed everyone," Anne suggested. "Either trying to protect the bridge, or else just gone crazy themselves." Luke nodded, shivering at the thought. "It must have been a real trick to get it in here in the first place." "Well, we're sure not going to get it out," Anne said, peering down at the tangle of debris where the walker's right leg had been. He cocked an eyebrow at Luke. "Unless..." Luke swallowed. Master Yoda had lifted his X-Wing out of a Dagobah swamp once, but Master Yoda had been far stronger in the Force than Luke was. "Let's find out," he said. Taking a deep breath, clearing his mind, he raised his hand and reached out with the Force. The walker didn't even quiver. Luke tried again and again, but it was no use. Either the machine was wedged too tightly against walls and ceiling to move, or Luke simply didn't have the strength to lift it. "Well, never mind," Anne said, glancing back down the corridor. "It would have been nice to have it mobile. We could have put it in that big monitor room behind the bridge and picked off anyone who came close. But we can use it here, too. Let's see if we can get in." Holstering his blaster, he climbed up the single remaining leg. "They're getting closer," Luke warned him, looking uneasily back down the corridor. "Another couple of minutes and they'll be in sight." "Better get around behind me," Anne said. He was at the walker's side door now, and with a grunt he pulled it open. "What?" Luke asked sharply, as Anne's sense abruptly changed. "You don't want to know," Anne told him grimly. Visibly bracing himself, he ducked down and climbed inside. "Still has power," he called, his voice echoing slightly. "Let's see." Above Luke, the blaster cannon traversed a few degrees. "Still has maneuverability," Anne added with satisfaction. "Great." Luke had made it to the top of the leg now, easing carefully past sharp edges. Whoever the walker had been fighting against had put up a good fight. The back of his mind tingled. "They're coming," he hissed to Han, slipping off the leg and landing silently on the deck. Dropping into a crouch, he peered back through the gap between the angled leg and the main part of the walker, hoping the darkness would be adequate to conceal him. He'd gotten out of sight just in time. The Imperials were moving swiftly toward them down the corridor, spread out in a properly cautious military formation. The 2-point men paused as they caught sight of the broken walker, probably trying to decide whether to risk a straight advance or to give up the element of surprise by laying down cover fire. Whoever was in charge opted for a compromise. The 2-point men glided forward, while the rest of the party dropped prone or hugged the corridor walls. Han let them get right up to the base of the walker. Then, swiveling the blaster cannon over their heads, he opened up on the main group. The answering fire came instantly, but it was no contest at all. Han systematically raked the walls and the floor, driving back the handful who'd been fortunate enough to have a nearby doorway to duck into, and annihilating those who hadn't. The 2-point men reacted instantly, one of them firing upward toward the viewport, the other scrambling up the leg toward the side door. He reached the top to find Luke waiting for him. His companion down below got 3 shots off, all deflected, before the lightsaber found him, too. Abruptly, the blaster cannon stopped firing. Luke glanced down the corridor, reaching out with the Force. "There are still 3 of them left," he warned, as Han opened the walker's door and squeezed out. "Leave him," Han said, climbing carefully down the back of the damaged leg and consulting his chrono. "We need to get back to Lando and Chewie." He threw Luke a mirthless grin. "Besides, the actuator crystals just burned up. Let's get going before they figure that out." The first wave of TIE fighters had been destroyed, as had all but one of the dropships. The Rebel escort frigate and its X-wings were now engaged with squadrons 1 and 3, and appeared to be holding their own quite well. And Captain Brandi was no longer smiling. "Squadron 4 launching now," Starfighter Control announced. "Squadrons 5 and 6 are awaiting your orders." "Order them to stand by," Brandi instructed. Not that he had much choice in the matter. 5 and 6 were recon and bomber squadrons, useful enough in their particular areas of expertise, but not in straight battle against Rebel X-Wings. "Anything further on the peremptory?" "No, sir. The last report from the Chimera, before our shields went up, had their ETA as approximately 15:19. Only about 7 minutes away. But battles had been lost in less time than that, and from the look of things, this could very well become one of them. Which left Brandi only one real option. Much as he disliked the idea of moving into range of that dreadnought's turbo lasers, he was going to have to take the Judicator into combat. "All ahead," he ordered the helm. "Shields at full strength, turbo laser batteries stand ready, and inform the leader of the boarding party that I want that dreadnought in Imperial hands now." "Yes, sir." There was a dull roar through the deck as the sublight drive came up to power. And without warning, the roar was joined by the hooting of the ship's alarms. "Bandits coming out of light speed astern," the sensor officer snapped. 18 craft, freighter class and smaller. They're attacking." Brandi swore viciously as he punched for the appropriate display. They weren't Rebel vessels, not this group, and he wondered who in the Empire they could be. But no matter. "Come around to 271, he ordered the helm. "Bring aft turbo lasers to bear on the bandits and launch Squadron 6. Whoever they were, he would soon teach them not to meddle in Imperial business. As to their identity, well, intelligence would be able to ascertain that later from the wreckage. "Watch it, Mara," Ave's voice warned over the comm. "They're trying to come about, and we've got TIE fighters on the way." "Right," Mara said, permitting herself a sardonic smile. For all the good that would do. The bulk of the Star Destroyer's starfighters were already engaged with the New Republic forces, which meant that all Cardis people were likely to get would be recon ships and bombers, nothing they couldn't handle. "Duncan, Torvay, swing down to intercept." The two pilots acknowledged, and she returned her attention to the inconspicuous spot beneath the Star Destroyer's central sublight drive nozzle, where her Z-95's lasers were currently blasting away. Beneath the shielding at that point was a critical part of the lower aft sensor package. If she could take it out, she and the others would have free run of the relatively undefended underside of the huge ship. With a sudden puff of vaporized metal and plastic, the lasers punched through. "Got it," she told Avis. "Lower aft central sector is now blind." "Good job," Avis said. "Everyone, move in." Mara pulled the Z-95 away, glad to be leaving the heat and radiation of the drive emissions. The Wildcarda and other freighters could handle the job of tearing into the Star Destroyer's outer hull now. Her small starfighter would be better utilized in keeping the TIE fighters away from them. But first, she had enough time to check in. "Jade calling Carda," she said into the comm. "You there?"
"Right here, Mara, thank you," came a familiar voice. And Mara felt a little of her tension drain away. "Right here, thank you," meant everything was fine aboard the New Republic ship. Or, as fine as could be expected while facing an Imperial Star Destroyer. "What's the situation?" she asked. "We've taken some damage, but we seem to be holding our own," he said. "There's a small tech team aboard the Katana, and they have the turbo lasers operational, which may account for the Star Destroyer's reluctance to move any closer. No doubt they'll overcome their shyness eventually."
"They've overcome it now," Mara said. "The ship was under power when we arrived, and we're not going to be able to distract them for long."
"Mara, this is Leia Organa Solo," a new voice came on the comm. "We've got a Star Cruiser on its way."
"The Imperials will have backup coming, too," Mara said flatly. "Let's not be heroic to the point of stupidity, okay? Get your people off the Katana and get out of here."
"We can't," Organa Solo said. "The Imperials have boarded. Our people are cut off from the docking bay." Mara looked across at the dark bulk of the dreadnought, lit only by its own running lights, and the flickers of reflected light from the battle raging near and around it.
"Then you'd better write them off," she said. "The Imperials aren't likely to be far away. Their backup will get here long before yours does."
And, as if cued by her words, there was a flicker of pseudo-motion off to her left, and abruptly three dreadnoughts in triangular formation appeared.
"Mara," Ave snapped.
"I see them,"
Mara said, as a second triad flickered in behind and above the first.
"That's it, Carda. Get out of there."
"Attention, New Republic forces," a new voice boomed over the channel. "This is Senator Garm Bel Iblis aboard the warship Peregrine. May I offer our assistance?" Leia stared at the comm speaker, a strange combination of surprise, hope, and disbelief flooding in on her. She glanced up at Carda, caught his eye. He shrugged slightly, shook his head.
"I'd heard he was dead," he murmured.
Leia swallowed.
So had she. But it was Bel Iblis's voice, all right, or else an excellent copy. "Garm, this is Leia Organa Solo," she said.
"Leia," Bel Iblis said. "It's been a long time, hasn't it? I didn't expect you to be out here personally, though perhaps I should have. Was all this your idea?"
Leia frowned out the viewport.
"I don't understand what you mean by all this. What are you doing here anyway?"
"Captain Solo sent my assistant the coordinates and asked us to come along as backup," Bel Iblis said, a note of caution creeping into his voice. "I assumed it was at your request." Leia smiled tightly. She should have guessed.
"Hen's memory sort of slips sometimes," she said. "Though, to be honest, we haven't had much time since we got back to compare notes."
"I see," Bel Iblis said slowly. "So it wasn't actually an official request from the New Republic."
"It wasn't, but it is now," Leia assured him. "On behalf of the New Republic, I hereby ask for your assistance."
She looked over at Virgilio.
"Log that, please, Captain."
"Yes, Counselor," Virgilio acknowledged.
"And speaking for myself, Senator Bel Iblis, I'm delighted to have you along."
This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.